So hi, I'm Phil Zembowitz, and this is Modern Client-Side Web Programming seminar for CS50 in fall 2010. And I guess we're having some people join us last minute. Hi. Anyway, the point of the seminar is to introduce you to sort of the newer things you can do in the browser in mostly JavaScript and sort of JavaScript related things like CSS and the modern like HTML5 components that you can use. So like Canvas, video, that kind of thing, which is really exciting because there's a lot you can do on the web now with just JavaScript and CSS and so forth. For those of you watching on video, the link to the presentation will be is just this. So, whoops. So just copy that down, and you can actually follow along with the presentation itself, or just refer to it later. There's a bunch of links in it, and this is a Prezi, so it's like an interactive presentation like this. So, in general, what I'm going to cover today is like design and styling, so the new things you can do in CSS that are kind of exciting, like, for example, using the fonts you want to use instead of just the ones that come with the computer. I'll talk a bit about jQuery, which is a really powerful JavaScript library that basically makes JavaScript usable and like practical for large purposes, like large websites and cool things you want to do with them. I'll go over graphics, sort of canvas processing, processing.js, all these different ways you can draw cool shapes, make interactive things in your websites. And then I'll briefly mention a few other topics that are sort of extra credit, like local storage and WebSQL, which let you basically store a considerable amount of information in a very accessible way in the browser itself, in your user's browser. And also I'll talk about making browser extensions and the one server-side thing I might mention is Node.js, which is running JavaScript on the server, which is kind of cool. Anyway, the first thing I'd kind of want to point out is that the web is such a friggin' hack, which is very true in many respects. So if you read this quote, imagine if I told you we were going to build a system to run our company. We'd use a domain-specific language for the data store, second language for the back-end code, which is run on a server written in a third language, fourth, XML-based approach to explain the documents, right, HTML, a fifth domain-specific language to explain the styling of said document, CSS, a sixth language to write all the front-end code, JavaScript, and a seventh, quote, language that is actually a library that makes the sixth language usable for our purposes. Would anyone think I was crazy? And that's the sort of state of things now. There's all of these different systems interacting to actually create web pages, and it is kind of crazy. Thankfully, in recent years, there's somewhat of a motion to start standardizing things and depend more on standards than on plugins and things like that. So HTML5 is a big push towards that. Using JavaScript as the standard language for everything, using CSS as the styling language for everything. So hopefully some of this complexity will start to be reduced. So it's up to us to change this, right? If the young developers, the people kind of just starting out, you're in the position of using whatever technology you want to use that suits your purpose and so forth. Large companies are kind of reluctant to take advantage of some of the most cutting-edge technologies because they have existing customers, right? So they have to cater to their existing clients, and if somebody doesn't have the most recent browser, right, they can't force them to upgrade, and as a result, like, they don't adopt a new technology. They do some sort of hack, right? So this is actually a really interesting kind of concept in how technologies and businesses develop. And there's this really good book, Innovator's Dilemma, which I recommend, about how adoption of technology occurs in many different industries. So this is sort of an older book. It's HBS professor Clayton Christensen. But it has a lot to do with sort of adoption of new technologies on the web and so forth. So one important thing about CSS that isn't really, I guess, taught, but you'll find out the hard way if you start doing a lot of it, is that browsers each have their sort of like defaults for different things. Like, if you notice, if you just have like a blank web page and you have a div that tries to fill the whole thing, like, most browsers will put some padding in. Most browsers will do things like, if you have like a header, right, they'll insert some margins outside of it and so forth. So if you want to actually have like complete control over how your website looks, you're going to have to use one of these things called CSS resets. And these are basically, so here are two examples. One is YUI3 CSS reset from Yahoo. And this one is very popular as well, Eric Myers reset CSS. And these are basically CSS files that you include, as well as your own CSS file. And they basically zero everything out. They remove all margins. They remove all padding. Get rid of crazy little tweaks that browsers might try to do, so that you actually have complete control over how your website is displayed and how your website looks. So this is like pretty important if you are trying to get like the look and feel of your website pretty clean. Granted, like some of the reset things won't actually be using, so it's kind of redundant, but it's something to consider. So anyway, one of the most interesting new CSS things in CSS 3 is this new property called transform. And basically, it's kind of like what it sounds. It takes a div, right? So just to review CSS, right? This is the selector. And apologies, this shouldn't be there, which won't be there if you look at this presentation. But so this is the selector. So this would select all divs that have the class box, for example, right? And these are the properties that would get assigned to that. And here, the traditional background color, that's old. But the transform is basically specifies some sort of changes that are applied to that particular div or that particular class of divs. So here we see we'd rotate it 180 degrees and scale it by 2, which is pretty cool because it wasn't really possible to do before. So there's a lot of different transform types you can do. And the cool thing about this is it takes the entire div or whatever it matches, right? It takes the entire selector and applies it to everything inside. So matrix, it's for people who know like linear algebra, like you can just apply a matrix transform to whatever. So you can do skews, rotations, everything in one. Or you can sort of decompose it into these different things like scaling, skewing, and translating, and so forth. So I'll have an example of this coming up real soon. And the cool thing about these transforms, right, is normally if you had this kind of transformation that we had here, right, this would just be applied before the actual website is loaded, right? But if we want to actually animate it, we can animate it. So instead of having the browser pre-process all the transforms, you can actually invoke it. Sorry, you can invoke them dynamically. So you can have it like change over time and actually get to that final rotation or translation or whatever you'd like to do. So you could use JavaScript to like keep changing what the style is and just like update it. So if you want to make a menu and you want your menu items to like increase in size, right? You could just have some sort of JavaScript that keeps increasing it and decreasing it. But that isn't really necessary anymore because there's this thing called CSS transitions. So it's similar. Again, it's the same mistake. Sorry, I should have looked over it. But what this says is basically any Kuba, can you open the door? Yeah. Any transform that's applied to these matching objects, right, will have this transition property. And basically, when that transform is applied, it will occur over a period of time. So here, 1 second, and it'll ease in and ease out that transformation. So here's an example of one of these transforms, and as you see, it's kind of like weird, right? It's just like a skewed little box, and it's kind of crazy. So let me just zoom in for the people viewing at home, right? So it's kind of like a bizarre example of like a div element that you basically weren't able to do before. And if we look at the code, right? Again, there's this one big div called wrapper, right? And it contains all the other elements, right? And if you see in the actual CSS, the div with the ID wrapper, right, it has these transition properties indented here. And at the beginning, right, before there's any action, right, it's translated to this particular state that it's in. So again, right, at the beginning, it looks like this. The thing is, if I hover over it, you'll see it changes, right? So how is that done? I'm not using any JavaScript, and I'm just using CSS. And this text box will behave just like any other text box and so forth, right? And I don't have to apply any crazy math to it or anything. And how that happens is here, I have a selector for the wrapper, but with the hover sort of action ending. I'm not actually sure what that's called, but there's a few different things you can add after the selector. And as you see, I transform it to something different here. And because there is this transition in the for the original item, right, any transformations that occur will occur with this transition timing. So everything will occur over the course of 1 second. So this is kind of like a trivial example, but it shows like how powerful it is. You know, I don't have to write any code. I can just declaratively say, like, okay, when you hover over this, make it bigger, rotate it slightly, and so forth. So just go back to the presentation. So like, what are the uses of this? One use from like very kind of like just like user interface design principle kind of background is to provide feedback for actions for users. I mean, I think in a website it's very difficult to have people build up like the appropriate mental model of what you're trying to do. Like, you know, these things are clickable. These things, you know, when you click this, something will happen. You know, that kind of thing is very useful. Like, if you click something, you might want it to like get dark for a little bit just to like say, okay, I've clicked it. You know, if you hover over things and they change slightly, you know that those are things that you can click and so forth. So this kind of CSS makes it really easy to kind of simply add that in to make things much more usable. There's one cool example of a lightbox for displaying photos. Yeah, so for example here you'll see, again, right, there's that principle of feedback, right? I mouse over one of these images and there's some sort of, you know, indication that, oh, you can actually do something with this. And then I click it, and this is actually just pure CSS transformations, right? You see this nice little animation of these images coming out. So this is linked in to the presentation, and you can actually go look at the source. And if you go look at the CSS, there's the same properties here, right? There's a transition, right? That the, you know, you can select what actually is subject to this transition. So here, just, you know, he's transitioning opacity for 0.2 seconds in one place and so forth. So, you know, the best way to learn this kind of stuff is to just actually go around and look at these examples. One example that I've made myself, which I find is pretty fun, is you can actually mimic three-dimensional things with these transforms, so like adding shadows and so forth. So this is less interesting for you guys, but if you imagine, right, depending on where I look at this page from, right, the you know, if I look at it from above, it looks like it's from above. If I look at it from below, it looks like it's from below.
And
yeah, so it's a face thing. This is the face thing is Flash, but if you can imagine, right, you know, how do I move this box and how do I create this shadow that's particularly skewed that way, right? It's using these transforms and these transition properties. So the sky is the limit as to what you apply this stuff with. So I guess that's just like, you know, inspiration. It's the first time I'm using Prezi for like a real presentation, so apologies if there's any like delays and stuff. So yeah, you know, check out these links. Look at you know, if you just look up CSS3 transforms and CSS3 transitions, you'll see a lot of these cool like image bending, like all sorts of crazy stuff that people do. So it's pretty neat. Another thing that's cool about recent developments in CSS is web fonts, right? So traditionally, if you're making a website, the user already had to have the font you want to use installed in their computer. So you'll see most CSS selectors are like this, right? It's like, you know, I want Verdana, but if you don't have Verdana, use Geneva. If you don't have Geneva, use Arial. If you don't have Arial, just I want any sans serif font. So font without the little, like, you know, legs, right? So if you're kind of a meticulous designer, if you're you know, into typography or you just want your site to be very consistent, you'd have to basically depend on a font that everyone has. So if we look at all of the fonts that people have, they're all kind of boring, right? Like, I'd say like these all look the same. Times New Roman is terrible to read online. You know, if you want both Mac users and Windows users, you have to specify two different fonts and so forth, right? Like, Mac users all have Helvetica, Windows users all have Verdana. They're kind of interchangeable, but you know, it's still kind of a mess. So CSS, the new CSS3 spec has this cool thing called at font face. So how this works, it's this other kind of tag. It's different than most CSS tags because it doesn't actually apply to a specific element. This is just sort of like, what this line basically says is like, I want to define a new font family, and that's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it font name. And here you're basically, okay, and I actually want to load a font file from this URL that's in the true type format. It's a format for fonts. And I want to call it a font name locally, right? So in this actual page. So basically, right, you can host your own font that you choose to use, and your website will actually display in this font style. So if you want to then use it, right? If you want your actual body, for example, to use this font, right? You just use it like normal font selection, and it'll be loaded in that way. So something to note, right? Like, where do you actually find these fonts? Like, there are some kind of like legal issues, right? Like, you can't just take any font that you know, a lot of the fonts on your computer, they're not actually like free. They're packaged on your computer because there's a deal between the operating system and the font developer, the word processor and the developer, and so forth. But there's a bunch of open source fonts that you can use. So three good places to look are Google Font Directory, which is pretty good. They have like 20-something fonts. The League of Movable Type is also very good. They have like more kind of like artsy kind of fonts, but they're all really good. And another cool place is Open Font Library. So if we actually look, right, these fonts are all kind of like pretty interesting and pretty unique, right? And what's cool about it, right, is what people used to do, right, is you could use whatever font you wanted, but you would just put it in as an image, right? But this is an actual font like any other font. I can just copy it and paste it, right, as I like. So if you want to use one of these, you know, cool fonts, definitely check out you know, one of these pages. So that's the end of this sort of new CSS stuff. There's a whole lot more. I just wanted to give an introduction. And to reiterate, that's the style of the seminar. I just want to kind of do high-level overviews of a whole bunch of different things. So take a look at you know, CSS 3 and see what's there, because there's a lot that's pretty cool. So now I'm going to talk about jQuery. So jQuery was the library that basically makes JavaScript usable. As you guys have discovered, right, this past week, just using JavaScript like straight up is kind of difficult, right? Like, you have to do all this like document, you know, get element by ID, like, you know, child node 0 if you want to, like, you know, add something in, right? Put something into inner HTML and so forth, and it gets kind of hectic, right? There's a lot of these, you know, variables you have to get, right? You have to get into the DOM, change something, you know, create a new DOM element, add it. It's just kind of like messy, right? And if you wanted to, for example, say something like, okay, well, you know, I have a particular div, and I have a few different, you know, types of children under it. Like, I have some paragraphs, I have some, you know, bold places and so forth. To say something like, you know, give me all the elements inside of that div that, you know, have this class but are not like that don't contain this other element. Like, it would be impossible if you were just writing that in pure JavaScript. Whereas in jQuery, that's kind of like a one-liner. That's just like three different little things combined together to select those DOM elements. So the core, I guess, philosophy of jQuery is and jQuery is also very popular. This is a statistic. So, for example, of the top 10,000 visited websites, almost 40% of them are running jQuery. So for a lot of things like animations, for just like manipulating the DOM, you know, adding things, so forth, it's very useful. jQuery also takes a lot of, there's a big focus. So John Rezik, the guy who developed jQuery, or led development of jQuery, he's at Mozilla. One of the big kind of philosophies behind jQuery is making it completely browser independent. So they take at great length, they make sure that, you know, whatever you do, you can just code like what you want to do, and more or less, most of the time, it will be like consistent across browsers. So that's why it's so popular. So in terms of like the actual, you know, adding jQuery to the page, you know, it's just like another piece of JavaScript you include, right? So you can go download it and just include it. But what's cool, and a lot of people do, is just use what's known as a content delivery network. So for example, here you'll see Google actually hosts jQuery that you can use, right? And at first you're like, okay, the user's going to my page, why don't they just get it from me? But the great thing about this is a lot of pages actually use this. And if your user has been to one of these pages before, it'll already have a cached copy of this. So basically, they won't even have to download anything. They'll already have that file, and they won't have to update it.
Can you just say CDN?
Yeah, so CDN is just like a network of servers that they just store information on. And it's like CDN is like when those servers are very close to you, basically. So like YouTube has a CDN, right? How is YouTube so fast? It's because they have lots of servers that are in all different areas.
Like cloud computing?
Sort of. But I would just think about this as like, okay, instead of using my own copy of you know, if this was like, you know, www.me.com/jQuery.min.js or whatever, right? There's no way the browser would know like, okay, this is the same as this other copy of jQuery.min.js I have. Whereas if it's pointing to the same exact address, the browser can usually, you know, just figure out that I already have that. I don't need to re-download it. Because it's relatively big. I mean, it's still not, this is like an optimization.
So like, if I use jQuery like a website, people have to download it to view the website?
Well, it's just another script that's included. So it's just like you have your own JavaScript that's included, right? And this is just another script that you would also load.
Nice.
So it's not like they have to like specifically download a plugin or anything like that. Yeah. So this is just an optimization, but you know, if you just throw this, you know, verbatim link into your document, like you can use jQuery. It's that easy. So the core of jQuery is this DOM selector, which makes it a lot easier to just find objects in a page or find DOM elements in a page and manipulate them. So right, if you do, so I'm going to use the board here for a second, Chris. Right. So if you do the normal way to get something in, or the normal sort of variable, right, in the DOM that of JavaScript, right, is like, you know, if I have var a's, right, is document, you know, dot get element by ID, and like whatever the ID is, right. So this is the JavaScript DOM element, right? If you just like, you know, print this, or if you console log this, right, you'll see it's just a JavaScript, it's a DOM element, HTML DOM element of some sort, right? And this has a few different properties, right? Like you could, for example, access like a, you know, style to change the style and so forth, right? Or you can, you know, for example, like if you wanted to add another object below this, right, you can do like append child, right, and then something else, right, like another element and so forth. But jQuery, it's like, okay, forget all of this. Like, we just want to get a sort of better version of this DOM element. So jQuery, what basically you can think of jQuery as doing is adding a whole bunch of these other kind of features, right, to this DOM element that weren't there before. So to actually find DOM elements, and this is something that like it's best learned through example, right? But the core of jQuery is this dollar sign function, right? And they've taken dollar sign as the name of the jQuery function, right? And so if you say something like this, what this does is basically gets you all of the elements, all of the div elements, right? And you can just basically do a whole lot more to those objects than you normally could, instead of getting like, traditionally, you would do get elements by tag name, right? You could do that. But here, it's just like, okay, give me all the divs. And it's as simple as that. And here, I'm attaching a function that is you know, you can do this in JavaScript as well, right? It's just like the onClick function. So here, it's basically saying, okay, when you click any div, give me an alert that says you clicked the div, right? This is kind of, you know, the most trivial example of jQuery. But like we can select, just like we use normal CSS selectors, we can basically select anything. So if I wanted to select, right, like, sorry, if I wanted to select, like, you know, all divs that have, you know, a class, say, you, like, you know, my class, right, that would select all the elements that are divs and have, you know, my class, right? If I wanted to select something with a particular ID, right, I could just do that same, you know, pound sign I would use in CSS, right, and then say, you know, my, whatever your ID is, right, and that's how you'd get at that object, right? So these are the jQuery-fied, I guess, versions of those DOM elements. And as I showed, right, there's a lot of different things. So once you've selected something, there's a lot of different things you can do. So one thing that's very common that people do is just like, you know, you can change the CSS on that object very easily as well. Like, you know, like for example, what this would do, right, is whenever this was executed, it would change all the divs with my class and give them CSS color of red, right? So again, these are things that you could easily do in JavaScript, right? But it's sort of more elegant. But where it really becomes powerful is doing things like, you know, animating or doing this like more complicated DOM traversal. So for example, if I wanted to you know, get all the divs of this particular class and get all of their children that have the class, like, you know, like, you know, something else, that would get me, you know, those particular other elements, right? So if we have, right, like a bunch of divs, right, this one actually has that class we're looking for, right? This would select all of its children that have this other class, like something, right? So this would give me a very specific element that I'm referring to, and then I can do whatever I want with it. So in terms of like what kind of things you can do, if you go on the website, I mean, the index is just like incredible, the length of objects, or the length of functions you can do. But it's things like, you know, like click, for example, is one that's very popular. Another thing that's very useful is that people do is for example hover. So it'll do something when an element is hovered over, and the way this works, right, is basically you do you specify two functions. And basically, this function is called when the element is first hovered, right? When the mouse moves over it. And this function is called when the mouse moves out. So it's a very sort of like clean way to wrap up a bunch of things together. So, you know, this kind of thing can be done with CSS, as I just showed, right? And it can also be done in JavaScript. So which method would you use when? I think like something like this is great because it's much more like programmable. So you could, for example, say like, okay, when you hover this element, go check over here, see if this is checked, right? And then, you know, hover it one way. So you could, for example, think about, like, you know, enabling and, like, disabling things, right? Or, you know, when you hover it, go off and do some sort of, like, computation or go do some, like, you know, do an AJAX request when you hover this, right? Figure out, you know, what's the current time or give me an update on how things like this work, right? So, for example, I think the new Google just added a thing where you have like page preview, right? And you like mouse over suggestion, right? And this image comes up of the actual website, right? And they're probably using something similar to this, right? They couldn't really do that with CSS because they wouldn't know all of the different variables that would have to like go in. So this is much more like programmable way of doing it, you know. So yeah, and you can sort of mix the two together, right? In the sense that when you hover something, you can add a specific class to that object, and when you like unhover it, when you move out, you can remove that class again. So you can have a specific CSS kind of style for hovered items that way. Let me just talk a little bit more about the basics, and then we'll just do a little demo that's kind of crazy. So one thing that jQuery can do, right? So the selector, right, it can take lots of different things. It can also take the document itself, right? The document object we're sort of used to thinking about. And one thing that's really useful is this document.ready construct, and it'll call this, you know, whatever function you put in here, so an init function. And that's a really good way of making sure that you start all of your JavaScript, you start all of the sort of client-side processing when the document is like finally done loading. Because as you'll notice, when you do more and more JavaScript stuff, like, you know, the different JavaScript files will load at different times, right? You don't want to just like have all your function calls like happen as soon as the document loads, because you don't know if like, or as soon as the particular script loads, right? Because you don't know if the other scripts are there yet. You don't know if the DOM's been completely built yet. Like, you don't know a lot of these things. So it's best to do something like this, right, where you wait till everything's loaded, and then you initialize the actual, like, you know, add all these listeners and send out some AJAX requests and set everything up. So that's a good thing that jQuery very much enables. And so, like I said, there's a lot of these registering of event callbacks, right? So just like ready had this callback, right? What's very common is doing what's known as closure in JavaScript, or anonymous functions, right? And so basically, right, instead of having some sort of external function that I call, right, like, you know, function, you know, my callback, and so forth, right? I just have this function just wrapped inside of here that will let me do something. So this is a cool thing about JavaScript, and it makes doing things like this really easy, right? You can have a sort of like custom little function happen when you have an event on an item. One really useful one in jQuery is this thing called live. So if you add event listeners to particular DOM elements, like you say, like, okay, I'll go through all of these links, and like when somebody clicks a link, I want them to like get a little like thanks for visiting my page, like little message, right? Let's say I'm doing AJAX and I create some more links. I add some more links to my page. The difficulty will be, right, those new links won't have that listener attached to them. Like listeners for particular events are attached to specific DOM nodes. So if you add new DOM nodes, those new DOM nodes won't have those listeners. So this is a way around that. They have this jQuery has this thing called live, right, which is basically saying, you know, of this selector, every time one comes, like one is added to the DOM, add a click listener to it that, you know, does this particular action. So it's very useful. You know, you can set this once and forget about it, and you'll know that every single, you know, div with the class box will have a click listener of this. So that's a very handy function that not that many people know about, but it's very useful. So these callbacks have this really interesting context. So this is like sort of advanced JavaScript stuff, and I don't really want to get into context itself, but basically, context refers to like what this refers to. And in jQuery, when you have something like this, I hate to use that word twice, but if you have something akin to what you see here, this refers to the actual DOM element that is selected there in with the selector. So for example, if I have this and I click one of these boxes, right? I click one of these div.boxes, this refers to that box. So if I wrap that DOM element in jQuery again, right? So if I create that jQuery object from that DOM element, I can again use whatever I want, you know, whatever like jQuery action I want to perform on that particular instance of the DOM element. So here, basically saying, you know, when I have a div with a class box, when it's clicked, add a class clicked to that div. So you'll have basically, as a result, you'll have a class that or a box that's div, and the classes will be box and clicked, right? So you could keep track of, this way you could, for example, keep track of which boxes have been clicked so far, right? If you're making a game or something like that. And again, just like more of these examples of cool stuff in jQuery. AJAX is like really easy. You guys remember like the AJAX request in just like straight up JavaScript is like 40 lines, right? It's like all these, like, you have to consider all these cases, like, is the user using Internet Explorer or, you know, a normal browser, like, register all these callbacks, like, wait for this ready state, like, all that crap, like, you don't have to worry about it. So Ajax in jQuery, there's a function called, so this is slightly different, there's no selector, right, because it's just, like, an event, it's not tied to a particular object, right, and so this, you know, jQuery.get, it's kind of self-explanatory, right, like, you have target, right, where you want to go, like, so here I'm using a PHP page. Here are the parameters I'd send in, right? So since this is a GET request, those would be URL parameters. And here's another callback, right? So just like, you know, the click and things have callbacks, right? This jQuery thing has a callback. And the callback actually contains data. So if we've loaded something, we can actually, like, manipulate it and do whatever. So you can imagine, right, you know, going, doing some sort of Ajax request, and then using another selector here, being like, okay, like, you know, select my results div, put my results into there, right? That kind of thing. And the last cool thing I'm going to mention about sort of jQuery is animations. Very easy. And again, you can do this animation in CSS, right? But the cool thing about jQuery is you can stack, like, multiple animations together. And you can do things like canceling animations, right? Like, so if something's moving, you want it to stop at a certain point, just like, you can just remove it, right? So again, very self-explanatory kind of syntax, right? You know, what objects do you want to animate? How do you want to change them? And of interest, right, for numerical things, like, you can set a target quantity, right? Or you can also set like a delta, so like how much you want to change something by. This is the time in milliseconds, right, over which you want to animate. And this, again, is another callback, you know, when the animation is complete. So you can think about, you know, for example, let's say we wanted to. So I'll give you guys an example of another little project I did that uses this kind of animation queuing, and it's just like a bunch of visualizations of sorting algorithms. So as you'll see, right, these boxes end up like swapping out, right, and moving places. And the way this is done is there's one animation call, or one call to animate that's being called to, for example, move it up, right? And there's another call that's, you know, move it to the left. And then the callback to that is move it down, right? So you can stack these animations up pretty easily. And it's very useful for making these more complicated animations like this. Yeah? What is being changed, like when the actual objects are moving. So in this case, I decided to use absolutely positioned elements. So if you do position absolute as your CSS tag, that'll basically just specify exactly where it is. So I'm animating left and top, because that's what absolute can do. So you want to check out the site's allsortsofsorts.com. I'm working on it a little bit. Anyway, that's it for my shameless plug. So again, right, and think about, you know, what I just mentioned about this, right? When this animation is complete, you can just, you know, animate this again, right? You don't have to reselect whatever box you're doing. And you can reselect it. Another kind of cool thing is you can actually select currently animating objects with this animated selector. So the way that would look is, let's say, I'm going to go to the board for a second. Let's say I wanted to select all like currently animated divs. I could just write this, right? And that would select all the, or you know, not, you know, and then do something with it, right? So if I wanted to, for example, at some point just cancel all animations, what I could do is just this, right? And this would say, okay, give me all the animating divs, and then just stop the animation on all of them. So that's another useful thing. So I'm going to show another little example. I don't know how useful it will be, but sort of illustrating a few of these topics. So I have this one div, and oh. you know, every time I run into it, right, spits out a whole bunch of other divs, right? So this is kind of like useless, right? But you can think, right, like the presentation software I'm using, Prezi, like you could do a Prezi kind of using this, right? Like if each one of these things were a slide and you just used some scaling transforms to like get at each individual slide, like you could easily make some sort of cool presentation software like based on this. So before things get too crazy, like, you know, the whole page is taken up. And good thing about, you know, browsers nowadays, there's a huge competition to get JavaScript as efficient as possible. So, I mean, look at all these elements. It's crazy, right? So I'll take this moment to interject, right? It's very useful to use these consoles, right? So in Chrome, if you just go to view, developer, and JavaScript console, or option command J, you got this cool console built in. And on Firefox, of course, you have Firebug, which is very similar. And it gets you, you know, very useful way. I mean, it's absolutely important to actually debug things in JavaScript. So like you can right click something and do inspect element in Chrome, and it'll show you exactly where that element is. And what's cool is you can actually go into here and go into style, and if you're actually trying to like, you know, restyle things, you can just move it around in here to try out different new things and so forth. But anyway, let's just take a little, just take a moment to like think about how this thing works. So again, right here, I try to make it better for the people at home. You know, here I load Java, I load jQuery, right? I have this whole, you know, document ready thing, right? So I load a certain function when I'm ready. This is for debugging. But it kind of illustrates, you know, using the console, right? I can actually figure things out. Here I'm using live, right? Just like I said, this will add some sort of listener for every single new element that's added. So every time there's a mouse over, it'll call this function with this, right? And it'll add a class called hover to that. And that hover class makes it darker, right? Or whatever happens, right? And here I have another listener that when I move out, it removes that class from the object, right? And if we actually look at what make new looks like, I'm using another jQuery function called clone, which is also very useful. It just takes a DOM element and like completely copies it, right? Including all of its children, including whatever styles you have applied to it, whatever. Just completely copies it. So, you know, when I mouse over an object, it copies that particular object, right? Because this refers to that DOM element, clones it, so creates a new one, and so n is a brand new one. Uses another jQuery function here, append, right? Adds that new element to the body. And then the last thing I do is the thing that was kind of crazy, right, was the animation. So just like I mentioned before, right, what this whole thing is doing is basically figuring out a random target like in the size of the browser window. So document body client height and client width give you the actual width of the document and so forth. So again, right, this got kind of crazy, but you know, it wasn't that many lines to actually make this. So Prezi actually isn't written in JavaScript, but again, you can imagine having something where, you know, I keep track of where these elements are, and then I can move between them or something, you know. So I guess, you know, as useless demos go, this is pretty useless, but, you know, you can make a game out of this or something like that. You know, you got a lot of friends or something. This could be maybe like a cool, one of you could do like a cool, like, Twitter animation, like, animating a conversation this way or something like that would be a cool little project. So I move on to like, so jQuery, as I mentioned, it's sort of easiest to learn just like by example. I mean, if you look at the website's like really good, although it's kind of like, the search kind of sucks, just to like warn you guys. So it's best just to search through Google, like, you know, jQuery, like, you know, append, whoops. You don't even have to type it the right way, and you still get, you know, like, and then, you know, they're really good at giving you these examples. You know, they'll give you these really kind of like, again, silly kind of like hello world type examples. So I'm not going to waste too much time giving these examples. And there's like a ton of stuff you can do with jQuery. So I really recommend. I mean, it's just like it makes you a whole lot faster at writing JavaScript. So the slogan is write less, do more, right? So there's another kind of jQuery related project called jQuery UI, which is another sort of level above jQuery. It's a plugin to jQuery. So again, it's very simple to use jQuery plugins. All you do is insert the script of the plugin as another script element, and you got it. So jQuery UI, it's slightly bigger. The reason they don't include it is it's big and not everyone uses it, right? And this will give you things like, you know, drag and drop, like if you want to drag and drop elements and like figure out like where you drag something into or that kind of thing. Sorting different elements by some value, you know, resizing. They have lots of cool like widgets, like accordions, so like little like menus that like you click one thing and everything else slides out of the way. Lots of cool stuff like that. And again, lots of really great demos there. And an interesting other side project, I mean, it's not done by the same people, but it's a jQuery extension. And it's a collection of like iPhone, so JQ Touch. And it's basically like iPhone mimicking UI components. So I don't know if you guys have looked at trying to make an iPhone app, but it's kind of a mess. Like Objective-C, I don't know. I don't like at all. I would never do that. So you can do something that looks very similar to a iPhone app in JQ Touch. So if we take a look at JQ Touch, so it's jqtouch.com. Again, you have, I mean, this is a little video that plays, right? But as you can see, it looks very similar to what a sort of normal iPhone UI would look like. And what's cool is your users could actually add it to their home screen as a link with a particular icon, and then it just like loads like a normal, I mean, it opens in the browser, but you can just load it like a normal app. So it's a lot easier to, and you know, you have all the like fancy like page flip and whatnot. So that's another thing to check out if you're interested in targeting mobile users. Yeah, I mean, so the way that stuff works is, so if you look on Google for like, you know, platform specific CSS, that's kind of how it's done. So basically, when you load something with a phone, it'll serve up a different CSS file that will just like make things slightly like conform to the shape of the actual phone. So just a quick note on performance, right? Like jQuery is pretty big, right? And it comes in two versions. There's this minified version, right, which is like super condensed, no spaces. All the variables are like single letters, you know, so, and so forth. And there's the development version, which actually has the proper function names and so forth. So when you're actually running your website, like you're probably going to want to use this because it's a lot smaller, so it loads faster, and also it parses faster. Which, so you know, at some point your computer has to actually go through and you know read all this and make an abstract like syntax out of it, and it's a lot faster when there's no spaces and crap. So again, here's some of the advantages and disadvantages of this, right? The disadvantages are it's really difficult to debug, right? Like if you're in Firebug and you get this message like, okay, like A has no component B, it's really hard to actually figure that out. So what people do is, you know, they work on the, you know, development version of jQuery, and then when they actually publish it online, they put the minified version. So you can actually minify your own JavaScript in your own CSS. Again, CSS is also something you can like compress quite a bit. So I would look at YUI Compressor for this. It's the one I've used, and it's pretty good. I mean, it like renames the variables it can rename. It like gets rid of all spaces, like renames functions, everything. It's good, and it's just a Java file that like takes in a JavaScript or CSS and spits out the minified version. And that's the address. If you want to get like even more hardcore, again, this is sort of like just for your curiosity, right? If you have these multiple JavaScript files, you can actually combine them into one. If you have a lot of them, and like multiple CSS files, you can combine them into one. So that only one HTTP request has to be made, as opposed to like a bunch of them in sequence. So if you want to like get to this level of compression, right, you can look at this thing called Minify, which is on Google Code. And it has to be done on the server, right, because it has to actually like manipulate the CSS and the JavaScript together. But as you see here, it's pretty good at like reducing a lot, right? So it goes from, in this particular example, goes from having 7 requests to having 2 requests, and it cuts the bytes by like, it's only a quarter of the actual bytes sent. So it's pretty useful. Again, those are kind of like, you know, at the front edge kind of optimization. So we talked about this sort of design styling and jQuery. Next topic I want to talk about, and it's the last like fully fleshed out topic that we have here. These are sort of more just like discussion points. Is graphics, or graphics. So the first big graphical thing we're going to talk about is Canvas, right? So Canvas is a new HTML5 spec object that a tag, right, that lets you basically draw inside of HTML, draw just right in the document. And it's very useful. I mean, it's very cool because you can sort of composite your own images right in using JavaScript and using the other things that you know how to use. So you have to think about this as sort of like a normal, just like canvas would be in the real world, right? So a normal canvas, the way it works, or whiteboard, I take some paint, right? I throw it at a board, right? And once it's on the board, I like can't really do much about it, right? Like I lost track of that paint. So if we step into the computer science world, right, it's like a procedural thing, right? It's not object oriented. Like the paint or the rectangle I just draw or the line I just drew isn't an object. It's just like a bunch of pixels that have been turned a certain color. So there's some advantages to this, right? In the fact that like it's fast, like you can kind of like compose these images sort of like in sequence and so forth. There's some disadvantages in that it's like hard to actually access a specific object in the canvas. So the best learning reference for this is if you just search for Mozilla Canvas tutorial, there's a great tutorial on the Mozilla website, which explains a lot of this stuff. And it's cool. So for example, what Canvas could be used for is like creating a like an analog clock on your website. You know, if you wanted to actually have a clock that has a seconds hand and a minute hand and so forth, like that's a good way to do it. A lot of people use Canvas for doing things like charting and like that kind of graphics. And here, even this is something I did, was like trying to sort of fake 3D with Canvas, which people have been also kind of like hacking around with. So this is very kind of, it's been around for a while, but I think right now people are trying to push further and further into developing this. There's even some examples of like Canvas ray tracers. So trying to do like, actually I kind of want to like look that up. Might as well. So these are kind of like, again, this is kind of like stupid and like no one would like really actually like do this. So basically how this works, right, is, so I mean, this is a graphics concept, right, but ray tracing is just kind of technique that you like follow a photon out, and like when it interacts with an object, you like deflect it in a certain way that a photon would deflect and so forth. And here somebody's written a ray tracer that uses Canvas. And this is, again, this is like kind of stupid, like no like real graphics person would do this, but this is sort of like looking towards the future, right? And if you see, like, I don't know how the video can really see this, but there's actually like the reflection of the big sphere in this little sphere, and the ground has reflections and so forth. So like you can do a lot, and Canvas is really useful here because like you can just like set up individual pixels to be individual colors based on these calculations and like create this cool image out of it. So the Canvas element is just like another element, just like div and body and whatever it. you know, very simple. You know, you always want to have an ID so you can actually identify it. And there's this thing called the canvas context, which is how you actually, from your JavaScript, this is sort of, I guess, you consider like your paintbrush, right? Like, how do you actually get, you know, access to this canvas, right? So here it's basically using the traditional selector, like, you know, find me the element with the ID, you know, tutorial here, and then here's, you know, this canvas specific way to actually get the context of the canvas. So one note, right? I had a question during the break about compatibility, right? So like, what happens if somebody's browser doesn't have canvas? So one thing you can do is when you have this canvas element, anything you put inside of here, inside of the actual tags, will be displayed only if canvas fails to load. So you can have a little. Most people will put this little thing like, you know, sorry, like you need canvas to see this. Or just like an image instead, you know. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to actually check whether Canvas has this getContext function. So you can just have a little statement that's like, you know, if you know Canvas.getContext, right, and that'll check, you know, does this JavaScript version have getContext from a Canvas element. So those are sort of two ways to check if a user has this capability. And again, as I said, right, it's useful for like, or it's, you know, important for like young sort of like you know, not like corporate developers to be using these modern things, right? Because it'll drive adoption and you know, wider use. If you look at the browser statistics, most of them out there now will have support for these things, but you know, it's still all going forward. So this context thing, I mentioned it's sort of like a paintbrush, and it's also a state machine. And this is a sort of like a, I don't know why this is so emphasized as a concept, but it's basically very simple. It's like you have this paintbrush, and like whatever you do to it, like stays done to it. For example, so the example would be like if I have a context, like if I'm drawing something, right, and I switch my pen, right, and I draw like a circle, right, like every other circle I draw isn't going to be black like my original pen. It's just going to be red. Like I've changed the state to red. For example, you know, if I like take a step forward, my state has changed, so I'm forward, right? So every drawing I do will be one step forward, and so forth. So when you're compositing these images and you're compositing these different things, right? You have to think about like, you know, what order do you do things in? So you know, if you want to like, if you like move and then you rotate and then you move, right? That second movement is going to be like applied after the rotation, right? So that you have to think about, sort of how your changes to this context sort of stack up. So there's a bunch of context properties that you can change, and like there's a whole lot of these. So like fill style will change, you know, whatever you draw is filled with, right? Stroke style will change whatever the outline is, right? Line width will change how wide any lines are at, or any like, you know, borders are, and so forth. The actual actions you can do with the context are things like draw rect, stroke rect, and clear rect. For the example of rectangles, right? So this is basically saying, you know, fill in this area that I specify with the current color, right? This is saying like just give me an outline of this rectangle with the current stroke color. And this is actually very useful. This will actually clear a particular area to make it white again. So a clear particular canvas area. And here are the transformations I mentioned. So like, you know, you can change the color, you can change the line width, things like that, right? And then using these things, you can actually move around, right? So change the scale of things and so forth. So this is sort of almost analogous to the CSS 3 transforms, but you can sort of keep applying these as you draw something over and over. Let me see what my... Yeah, so I guess maybe we can do like a simple simple little demo. It's basic canvas. Okay, and let me just open it. So as you'll see right now, like, it's just a canvas. There's like nothing there. Right? It just got a little border. It's kind of boring, right? But right here, if you look, this is like a very like simple example, right? We can do something like, okay, so let's say I want to change the fill, and like I want to make a red, like a red rectangle. I would change the fill style to RGB 200, like red, for example. And then, so the thing is, like, it's very useful for this is this actual, like, this canvas cheat sheet, which you can get online. And it'll actually, if you look at this, if you actually download this, this will give you all of the different like properties that you can apply to Canvas. So, for example, here I'm using fill style and then draw rect or fill rect. So let's say I want it to start at 10, 10, and I want it to be 20, 20, 200 of red, 0 of green, 0 of blue. And I actually want to fill a rectangle, you know, at 10, 10, and I want it's, you know, 20 by 20 wide in terms of pixels. So here we go, right? Very kind of like stupid example. And like, let's just like apply some transformations and see how they work. So let's do something like, you know, change the drawing color. So I'll make it green, for example. And then fill another rectangle of the same kind of, you know, same size. But let's, instead of drawing it from the same like place, let's instead draw it, let's just like translate a little. Let's move a little bit. So this will draw, right? This will change the drawing head, right? Like I said, that this is a state machine, right? It'll change where the coordinates begin. So it'll basically move in 10 by 10 and draw from there. I guess to make this more like obvious, like let's move like 50, 50. And let's do something, for example, like, you know, let's like rescale it. So like, you know, scale it by like 2. So hopefully this will work if I haven't screwed anything up. Right? And okay, there we go, right? So as you see, you know, I drew this square using the same exact call to fill rect, right? It was 10, 10, and 20, 20, right? So offset by 10 pixels and then 20 by 20 pixels in the actual size, right? But if you remember, and if we look back at the actual code, right? Between those two, right? So what I was saying is that this line and this line are exactly the same, right? And the difference is that I've actually applied these transformations between there, right? So these transformations sort of stack up, right? And again, right, like these aren't, I'm not creating DOM elements here. I'm just dropping these pixels onto the canvas. So that's sort of like a basic demo. I mean, you know, what kind of things is Canvas useful for? Well, there's this one one thing that's very useful is, oops, that's not that cool, is actually, you know, drawing images. Like, you can take an image and then draw it and, like, scale it however you want and, like, mix it up with a bunch of different other images right in the canvas. So an example that I have of this that I did, again, was... I think this is the one, yeah. So this is a... So you all know, you know, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but thanks to Canvas, we can do things like, you know, straighten it or, you know, change the angle of it, right? And So like this looks pretty cool. I think what looks pretty cool is like, you know, if you actually do like, it's underground, right? So Pisa in like 20,000 years. And if you think about how this image is composited, right? I'm spotting out all these pixels for the background. I'm drawing the actual tower, and then I'm adding this front bit separately. So if we look at how, so draw image, right? If you've loaded an image, right, from a particular source, you can then use that same context and the same translations and movements and rotations and whatever to draw that image in a specific location. So this basically says, you know, add an offset of 0, draw that image. And so in the Pisa example, right, you can see how that's being done, right? Is there's just a certain translation being applied. Now, interestingly, what I've done here is that you can do in Canvas is you can actually have it be an image. So if you see this, right, this isn't actually like a DOM element. This is just like a normal image. So I can copy it and paste it into an email or something like that. So let's just quickly go over how that's done.
If you copy the image, is it just kind of that layer of the image, or is it going to be the whole canvas?
Yeah. So the question was, if you copy the image, is it going to be the whole canvas or the whole image? So let's look at the actual code for the image bit. Oh yeah. So this is the actual. So the animation is kind of confusing. I mean, so how I'm doing animation here, I'm not actually using jQuery. I'm just kind of like updating it every, you know, 10 milliseconds or whatever to get closer and closer. But what happens at the end, right, is Canvas has this very useful function called toDataURL, which basically whatever is inside of that canvas will just like create this like crazy like base64 URL out of it that you can then use as a source of an image, right? So if you actually look, in the Pisa example, like if we actually inspect this, right, we'll see the source, right? Normally the source of an image is like, you know, something like, you know, whatever slash, you know, JPEG, right? So the source is actually this crazy mess, right? Which is actually the image data that I've pulled from the canvas. So you can redisplay it. So all I'm doing at the end, right, is taking the canvas for, you know, everything that's in the canvas, dumping it to the string using toDataURL, and then setting the source attribute of this image, right? This is just a normal image that's on top of the canvas, right? Setting that to the data. So that's a little trick that that's cool, right? So you can think about using Canvas to, like, you know, do something like a photo editing application or something like that, where you can, like, you know, do all these changes to the image, right? And then actually just have it be a normal thing that you can copy out. And this is something that, for example, Flash can't do, or like you can't, you know, easily, you know, right click and copy a Flash thing like in the way people are used to. So that's a useful thing about Canvas, is you can actually draw these images and then actually like bring the images back out using toDataURL. Again, sorry, I mentioned, right, like animations. You know, if you put all of your drawing inside of a function and then, you know, keep calling that function over and over again, you know, you can update the parameters over time, and every time the function is drawn, it's drawn slightly differently, right? So you're going to want to think, right, if you're redrawing like a bunch of stuff, like you might want to actually clear the whole canvas between each frame, right? Like let's say I'm drawing a square, right? And then I move over and I draw another square, and I move over and I draw another square as I'm animating, right? Like these old squares will still be there. Like the pixels from the old squares will still be there, right? So what I might want to do, right, is when I draw a square, then the next time I draw a square is actually call like clear rect on the whole canvas, right? And then draw the new square. And then clear rect and draw the new square and so forth. So that's how you can get sort of smooth-looking animations done here. What do I have left? Yeah, and definitely check out, you know, Canvas Cheat Sheet if you're interested in doing something like this. It's very useful. I'll mention a little bit later on that you can actually draw other you can actually draw other DOM elements into Canvas. So you can, for example, get a video and draw a part of the video in the canvas at like a certain place, which is pretty cool. Like, it's kind of like, it's not like super useful, but it's really cool that you can like composite all of these things together in one place. So I'm going to talk about like my kind of, so this isn't like super popular for like UI design, but it like should be. So that's why I'm talking about it. So processing is a Java-derived language, and it's like it's built for sort of like artists and designers. So it's like a very different perspective than sort of like, you know, traditional programming languages, are more for like, you know, programmers. So I did a talk on this last, I did a seminar on this last year. So this is just gonna be a brief discussion of this. So processing is a lot like Canvas, right? It's a state machine. Like, you apply these transformations, you draw things out in certain places. There's no inherent objects in processing either, right? So like, once you drop some paint, like, it's done, right? The paint's taken out. But it's really cool. Like, it comes with this little IDE, this little development widget, which you can like, you know, you type in your code, you press play, it has a little console and so forth. It's pretty useful. And so it's a Java program, right? So this runs, like, you can run it online in a Java applet, but as I'll show you later, it's actually possible to run it as JavaScript, which is pretty cool. So it's like very like lightweight and very cool and like interactive.
Sorry, what's an applet?
So an applet is like, so the difference, so the question is, what is an applet? An applet is when you have something in a web page that isn't basically in the HTML specification. So it's like Flash applet. It's like a specific other kind of application running inside of the browser. So it requires a plugin to be installed. So if you want to run this in the browser, this requires a plugin. But I think this is a very useful language for like fleshing out kind of like visual ideas and like graphical ideas that can then be applied to client-side sort of graphics and display. So in terms of like the actual basics of processing, how a processing sort of script works, right? You have the setup function, which does kind of what like you'd expect, right? Like, it sets what size you want to draw. Here I'm saying, okay, I don't want to have a stroke. I don't want to have an outline for my images. And I want to fill it with like a shade of gray here. And the other function is the draw function, which actually goes and draws things, right? And this is very similar to how you think about, you know, Canvas drawing, right? And there's no notion of like context or everything. It's just like all about drawing stuff. So here I clear the entire screen, and here I'm doing, right, I'm doing two loops, calculating some numbers out, and drawing some ellipses. And the ellipses, right, have an x and a y value based on these loop counters, right? And then the actual size is calculated as being related to the distance from the mouse. So these are these kind of global variables that you can actually use. So how does this actually look? Where'd my folder go? There we go. So how does this actually look? No. Where'd it go? Okay, so again, this is the same code. And, you know, in just like a few lines of code, we've created this cool thing that's like, you know, based on, so to zoom in for you guys, right? So I'm drawing a whole bunch of circles, right? And they're being adjusted, their size is being adjusted based on the distance from the mouse, right? So again, this is kind of like a more like, you know, like kind of experimental kind of scratch pad for ideas, right, for visual ideas. But you can actually convert it to stuff on websites, which I'll show you in a second. So, right, we have this draw function, which actually goes and updates the things, right? And it's called a certain number of times per second. There's a frame rate that you can change, or you can actually leave. It's like 30 by default. So like I said, right, like if you think about each of these ellipses, right, like as soon as it's drawn, like it's kind of forgotten about. Like there's no, like, this ellipse doesn't have any properties, right? Like every time we draw it, we have to like recalculate out what the x and the y are and so forth. But because this is Java, we can actually use some of the like object oriented stuff in Java. And just as if you're really interested in processing and like just want to do processing for a project or just like for fun, check out the seminar last year. Again, another shameless plug. But there's a processing specific seminar I did last year, so you can learn a lot more about this. But so the objects in processing, there's a lot of Java classes that you can group things together. So the example here is, and you know, I'll give this for like as a sort of basic example. Here's a class that I'll call ball. So this is an object named ball. And it has some of its own parameters. So you can think of this as like a function that has like, you know, local variables, right? So the local variables here are x position and y position and an x speed and a y speed. So this will be a ball that like moves through space, right? And if I want the ball to be an object, right, it has to have some sort of parameters like associated with it. Like I don't have to recalculate how fast that certain ball is moving every time, right? Like it has its own speed, it has its own location, like it should be able to keep track of those, right? So when I create a new ball, right, this is what's known as a constructor, right? When I say, like, you know, this object is a new ball, this is what's actually called, and it'll set, like, okay, so the ball's x position will be x, the ball's y position will be y, and here I'm setting a speed, right? And then when I actually do update, right, I'm updating the x position based on the speed, right, making sure to wrap, and then I'm drawing the ellipse, right? So why would I want to do this? So instead of having to go through in the main loop and kind of like, you know, recalculate all this stuff on the fly, each of these objects can just have its own parameters. And I can just call update on one of these objects to have it be drawn out. So how would it actually look in the code, right? You can use this thing called an array list to keep track of objects. I've left out the, this should say like array list balls is new, is a new array list. You know, ball, my ball is a new ball with these initial parameters. Yeah, this is pretty much Java, right? And then you want to add, you know, the new ball to the list of balls. So let's actually look at an example of this. So this is that, so again, right, we have this like single ball, right, that's moving along. And how is it actually being updated? Well, if you look at the draw function, I'm clearing the background, right? I'm making the background a shade of gray. And then I'm going through that ball's array list. I'm getting that particular object out, right? In this case the ball, and I'm calling update on it. And if you remember, update actually did the update and the actual drawing of the object. And you'll note as well that there's this construct in processing where there's some functions that have special properties. So if you have a function called mouse clicked, it'll just get triggered every time there's a mouse click. So here I'm basically adding another ball to the list whenever I've clicked the mouse. So if we'll look at the actual Java applet, you know, I can keep clicking and add a lot of these objects. And like, you know, if you're thinking about how this is all being drawn out, right, it's all being drawn out by going through this list, calling update on all of these objects, and drawing all those objects out. So we have a notion of an object, right? Like, it could have many more properties. Like, these objects could interact with one another if we chose to. But it's a good way to sort of encapsulate these things, right? These properties. So I encourage processing is great, even if it's not as useful for the actual like final website that you're creating or final sort of visualization or whatever. I mean, it's great for visualization, but it's a great way to sort of sketch out sort of interaction ideas and design ideas. So here I mentioned mouse interaction. So processing is great, but like the Java applet inside of an actual browser is kind of crappy. I mean, Java, like, it's kind of like insecure, it's big, it's slow, it doesn't run well, like, whatever. So processing JS is this cool, it's like a port of processing into Canvas. So basically, processing is very good at letting you, like, kind of manipulate all of these different visual elements and draw these cool visual things and, like, you know, use objects and so forth. But Canvas is a great way to actually display this. So the John Resick, the author of jQuery, actually wrote this port of processing to JavaScript so that you can actually write something in processing and display it in the browser. So for the people who want to do this, right, you load these two other scripts. This one is the actual core, you know, processing library. This one actually you can also find on the website. We'll load up all of the, we'll kind of like synchronize all the canvases with the processing elements. And then you add in your processing code just as like straight up the same processing code you would use in a processing applet on its own. And it, as you see, right, it has a different application type, right? It's a processing thing instead of JavaScript, instead of, you know, text JavaScript. And it has a target, right? And its target is this canvas that we're going to draw to. So when that init function loads, it'll actually start creating the, it'll start updating the canvas with whatever's going on in the processing. So as an example of this, there's this application, which is which like you could actually use in a browser, right? Like there's you know, this is in the browser, right? And this could be like a very useful way to, for example, select data. So it's known as the bubble cursor, and it selects the closest object, right? So the whole code's been written in processing, right? And if you want to get into that, like, you know, just, you know, explore around and play around with it, right? But in terms of how it's actually put in here, it's actually put in with processing JS, right? So what's cool is you can actually access JavaScript functions from processing, right? So if you have a JavaScript function, you can just call the JavaScript function by its name from the processing code and like pass it parameters, and as long as they're like, like you can pass, you know, ints as ints, floats as floats, strings as strings. Like, don't pass like complicated data structures because it won't understand, right? But you can pass most things back and forth like that. And you can actually access processing functions from JavaScript as well. So this is slightly more involved, right? You have to modify this init.js function to keep track of your processing object. So if you look into that init.js, you'll see one position, you'll see a place where you have, where you create the actual new processing object, so you have to keep track of that. But as long as you've kept track of it, you can actually just call whatever function you want to call using that cached processing object. So here I do that, and I have this button here to add more targets, right? And this button here is purely, it's just in the JavaScript, right? It's just a DOM element. Right, it's a div here. But if I look at the script, right, like how does it actually work? Right, when this button is clicked, I call that processing item I stored, right, with the function I want to actually do. So there's a function in the processing I've created. Somewhere, right, new target, right? And this is a function written in processing, right? It creates one of these new target objects I have here, right? But that's being called from the JavaScript. So it's pretty cool. Like, you can imagine this would be a great way to, you know, if you're doing, like, an interactive data application, it's a great way, like, you know, you could use JavaScript, like, you know, do some Ajax, get some fresh data of some sort from, like, you know, finance or like, weather information or something. And then, you know, code up some cool graphical thing in processing, and then, you know, throw that data back and forth and display it, which is pretty cool. Or you could go and actually write the stuff in Canvas yourself, but processing takes care of a lot of the cooler stuff for you. So, or the more difficult stuff for you. So yeah, this is kind of like a work in progress, but, you know, it's very cool because it's sort of bringing together the graphical, you know, designers and the web community quite closely. So there's a bunch of other JavaScript graphical libraries for like static graphics that are pretty cool. So like, you know, processing is all about stuff like moving around and like interacting with the mouse and that kind of thing, right? But let's say like you just want to draw out like a custom little graphic like once. So there's two different cool ways to do this, or that I've used. One of them is Raphael. So this creates SVG graphics. And the cool thing is that these SVG graphics are actual DOM elements, so they can each have their own listeners and so forth. And you know, the way it's like a very procedural kind of script that you just, you know, you're like, you know, connect the line from here to here, like, you know, fill this area with this and so forth. So it's a great way to come up with images like that quite easily. Another very cool one is called ProtoViz. It's from Stanford. And it's another declarative library that you can do these SVG graphics with. And it's really good for like charts and graphs. So like if you just want to draw out like you know, one time you just want to draw out. I mean, you can do it like a few different times, right? But it's the way it's kind of structured is to just do it once to draw out these cool graphs and charts and so forth. So
what's SVG?
So they're called scalable. So what is SVG? SVG is scalable vector graphics. So it's basically a set of XML elements or HTML elements that like define shapes and so forth. So, you know, the thing is, like, if you scale it up, right, like, you would just scale all the values. So it's not like, in contrast to, so there's vector graphics and there's bitmap graphics, which are just pixels, right? And if you scale a pixeled image, right, it gets fuzzy, right? I mean, just like, you know, for example, when I do this thing on the Mac, right, like, this is a pixel image, right, and there's, you know, it's all pixelated. And there's some sort of smoothing function, right? But it's still very jagged, right? Whereas vector graphics, it's like you're defining like mathematically like this shape is this shape is this, and so forth. So the advantage of this, right, is it's very easy to, when you have just circles and lines, it's very easy to do, you know, just this kind of thing, right? But it's difficult when you want to do more complicated things, because then, like, you know, you're going to have like, hundreds of control points and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you're choosing one or the other of these different libraries to use, I think it's like it's really good to just go out, see them, you know, try them, and see what you like. Because a lot of it is, you know, a lot of the same functionality on a web page can be achieved in like many different ways. But it turns out to like, you know, what you need and like what you like working with. So. I'm not going to talk much about Flash, but I'm going to mention it. So Flash is like it's very much like in the news recently. It's like, you know, yeah, like is it going to be on like Google TV or like is it on the iPhone or like what's really the deal? And actually, Flash is very powerful. I mean, I spent all last summer working on Flash, and there's a lot of very useful things that can be done in Flash that really can't be done anywhere else. Like, for example, using a webcam. So in that 3D web page example, like, without a webcam, like, there's no way that would work, right? So Flash is the only real way to get access to a webcam through through a web page. Flash also has, like, very, like, it's built on graphics. So there's, like, very strong filters and, like, ways to combine images and so forth. So, like, you can just take a particular, like, part of the thing and just, like, blur it or, like, apply some sort of crazy filter to it and so forth. So it is on 97% of most browsers, right? So it's very like very widely distributed, and a large part of that is that it's really easy to do like media streaming and that kind of thing on Flash. You know, if you want to look at this again, last year I did a seminar on Flash and this specific visualization library called Flare. So check that out from seminars 2009. But yeah, I mean, I would check out Flash if you're doing stuff like some sort of like, you know, heavy image processing, or you want to do like real time chat, that kind of thing. There's one really cool thing about Flash which I forgot to add here, which is they have this protocol called RTMFP, which is real time media flow protocol, I believe. And it actually is the only way I know of that you can connect one browser to another browser like directly. So do like peer to peer instead of like through a server. So that's how, for example, Chat Roulette worked, right? Chat Roulette was run by like some, you know, 16-year-old in Russia, who had like no money and yet was able to make the service that like millions of people use, because none of the video is actually going to a server. All the video is going straight between the clients. So, you know, that's a really cool thing about Flash that's sort of like slept on. Like nobody, like not that many people use it, but it's very useful if you want to create a chat application or something where you're, you know, sharing information with people or like updating people like in real time. It's very useful. And there's a huge community behind Flash. So I'm not going to dwell too much more on it. You know, it's out there. It's there for you to use. You know, to be warned, right, doesn't work well on... So everything I've pretty much talked to you up until now works great on, like, phones, right? This, like, you know, it works on, like, the newest Androids, like, somewhat. You know, it's not that good. Similarly, like, you know, iPad and so forth, it's like you can use Flash to create, the way it works now at least, is you can use Flash as an authoring tool for iPhone apps and iPad apps, but it's not like it'll display in the browser. So that's one big drawback. And it's, you know, completely, you know, business decision of Apple to do that. So anyway, so there's this thing called HTML5 video, right, which is like one of the big competitors to Flash now. One of the greatest advantages of Flash was like you could do edit like video streaming really easily. HTML5 video, it's like just kind of like canvas. It's just like boom, you have video in a tag. You don't have to do any specific craziness. So in terms of, you know, the video encoding, like there's a few different formats that your video has to be in to display in the video tag. So the two encodings that are popular are OGG and H.264. And your audio can be in like MP3 or like AAC, that kind of thing. So, you know, again, this is something I would look up if you're trying to do this. But a transcoder I've actually used when I was playing around with this is called Handbrake. So you take whatever video you have, put it in the appropriate format, and then you can use it with video tag. The video tag itself, again, is kind of like trivial. It's just like video, like what size you want. The source will actually be your like video file. And there's some other like tags you can add. So for example, here I've added the tag controls, and that'll have like a basic that'll add some basic controls to your video, like, you know, pause, rewind, play, that kind of thing. There's also other tags you can look up, such as like autoplay and that kind of thing, or, you know, so autoplay, basically if you say autoplay, it'll download the video and immediately start playing it as soon as it's loaded. Whereas I think the default is to just have it loaded but not play it. So video tag is useful. It's like, it's cool because it's very lightweight. Like you could just have like a little video playing on the side of your page, and you know, it's cool. You can definitely do a lot with it. If you're looking for more like kind of like hard, like not hardcore, but like more like fully featured, like already developed solution, there's a great video player called JW Player, which is actually what CS50.tv uses. So this actually addresses the issue of backwards compatibility. So how this works is it's an HTML5 video element, but if you don't support, if your browser doesn't support video, it actually falls back and uses Flash. So that's a very useful thing. If you have some sort of video that you want to make sure that everyone will see, you can use something like JW Player from longtailvideo.com, and it's very useful for that cross browser compatibility. And like I mentioned, right, you can use Canvas as this like crazy like mashup area where you can actually do things from other you can take other parts of your DOM and redraw them in the canvas in crazy ways. So instead of talking about it, I'll just show it to you. So we have this video playing. It's like OGG. So it's like pretty good quality, right? Like this is good video, right? It's been transcoded into one of these formats. But this is actually a canvas element. And using those canvas manipulations, right, I can take bits of that video and like move them around, right? So how this works, right, is there's a video element somewhere on this page that's not actually being displayed. And the canvas element is using draw image, right, that function I mentioned for actually drawing an image. And instead of using an image as a parameter, it uses the video as a parameter. And so you can actually take, and what it's doing here, right, when this actual explosion happens, is each individual square is being drawn as a square out of that video. So this is like an advanced example, but if you just look this website up, you know, their code's all here, right? And you can actually see that, for example, here, you know, you're drawing from this, you know, copy, right, onto the appropriate, you know, tile location in this image, right? So in this actual canvas. So, you know, while this kind of thing might not be, you know, super useful, you know, it's hard to imagine. Sorry, it's hard to imagine that like people aren't going to find really cool ways to use this kind of combination of you know, video and canvas and all these different elements all together. So you can imagine like, you know, some sort of 3D museum you could walk through using this, or, you know, I mean, there's endless possibilities, and that's why it's exciting. So we could watch movies for the rest of the time. So yeah, I'm going to wrap up, and in wrapping up, I'm just going to go through like a whole bunch of different like other things to check out. Hold on a second. We're going to let this guy in.
Oh, no. He had a
swipe.
He came in and then he went up.
Oh, OK. So I'm going to talk about a few other things just like in brief, because I don't have time. And I didn't actually make examples, which is good, how this worked out. Local storage is really cool. So if you wanted to previously store something on a user, like if you wanted to like keep track of user information, like you would use cookies, right? And cookies were like these little files, right? They'd be all over the disk, right? They'd like expire at certain times. It's kind of like messy, right? But local storage is this way basically where you have like an associative array for each particular domain in the browser. So let me just like show you how this works. I mean, it's very simple. So local, it's basically like the way it's used is you just do like local storage, like you know, key is equal to value, right? So basically, every single domain has its own like local storage. So like if I'm google.com, I can access this like particular array, right? Just like you know, it's like a PHP or JavaScript array that can use anything as a key. So like you can basically store like, you know, some sort of like, you know, you can cache some sort of document on the user's hard drive, or you can actually store, you know, some information about a particular user, and it's only going to be shared when that user visits your site or your domain. So it's very useful. I mean, it's like I can just like keep track of people's like, you know, personal settings or personal adjustments and so forth, and you know, they won't be lost unless the user clears their local storage. Another thing that's also like under very kind of active development is WebSQL, and that's another example of that kind of like domain specific, but like on the browser storage. So this is what it sounds like. It's just like a relational database in a particular user's browser. So again, like you can sort of the syntax is a whole lot more complicated, right? But it's still like you get a pointer to this database, you can insert values, and then you can query for particular values. So it could be, I mean, it's been very useful, for example, like if you're doing some sort of like charting on a lot of data, like you have a huge chart with a lot of information, you want to basically, you know, one way you can approach it is you don't want to display all the information at once, but you can, for example, load it all into a WebSQL database table on the browser, Then when the user actually wants to like visualize something, right, they can filter it, and they can just do a select query on the local database. And that's what you could actually draw out. So it's sort of like, it's kind of bizarre, right? It's like, why would you want a database locally? But I think that's what's exciting about it, again, is like people haven't really like, this has been around for like a year, you know? So there's a lot of opportunity for new development. So I would definitely check this out if you have any application that has like a lot of information that you might want to like filter and like parse and so forth. WebSQL is a great way to store it. And the last thing I'd like to draw your attention to is the file API. And it's actually two words, but I just wrote it as one. So it's another new HTML5 thing. And basically, it allows you to interact with files in a much more like dynamic way. So previously, if you wanted to, for example, upload something to a website, you would have to click some sort of button, and then that dialog box would appear. That dialog box would appear, right, and you'd go through your folder and select what you want to upload. Whereas if you notice now, for example, Gmail, right, you can drag and drop a file into Gmail, and it'll just be attached. So file API, what it represents, and there's a few different classes, like there's file reader, there's a class like that, which you can actually get a pointer to a file in a sort of like C-like way. So you can actually get a pointer to a particular file and then read out particular chunks out of that file and, for example, upload them or do things like that. There's also an API for like dragging and dropping files into an actual web browser, which is very cool. So if you drag and drop a file, you'll get actually pointers to those files, and then you can read from them and upload them and whatnot. So that's another thing I would read up about. So I guess I have like, this is the end of my actual slides. But let me, first off, do you guys have any questions of the people here? Oh yeah, so the bit.ly, yeah, for everyone at home too, it's useful. This is the link to the presentation. So DA Z 2 Z. And yeah. So I didn't really have time to talk about this, but one thing to note, for example, is browser extensions are in most browsers are actually just HTML and JavaScript with a few different like browser specific APIs. So one extension I made was like for the HUD's menu, right? And this is just this is just made purely using so if you actually do inspect pop-up, should appear somewhere, you'll actually see that this is just a normal like HTML page, right? It has a header, it has some contents, right? There's the different divs for the different lunch and dinner and so forth, right? So if you learn this JavaScript and HTML stuff, you learn this, this is all done using jQuery and similar libraries. You can create these, interactive applications. So I click lunch, right? And it gives me all the different categories as to what's for lunch. So you guys are looking forward to some like taco meat today, right? But as you see, right, I mean, it's just all jQuery. Like I have, for example, where would local storage be used, right? I allow, like one thing I do is like if somebody doesn't like a category, like they can just remove it, right? But you don't want to have to remove it every single time you load this extension, right? So I can use local storage and say like, okay, so like local storage for like, salads like is like no. And I can keep track of has this user disabled salads in their application. And it's a lot easier than like using some cookie where you have to like do all this hackish stuff to actually keep track of it. So Chrome, Firefox, and now Opera have these extension bundles. So I mean here's another one I made that was kind of stupid. Oh no, that's not it. This one was cool. So what's actually cool about extensions is you can inject JavaScript into like existing web pages, right? So I made this extension that lets you like resize particular CSS of particular elements, right? And again, it's using a jQuery, right? It's injecting jQuery into this page, and then you can manipulate things and so forth. So, yeah, if you don't want to make a website, but you want to make an extension for browser, that's a great way to use JavaScript and CSS and so forth. I hope you enjoyed it. If anything, you can make this, tilting thing now, right? I hope you've gotten, inspired and found some links and found some sort of ideas to start creating these, interactive, kind of like, new school internet applications. Enjoy and experiment and have fun. Thanks.
Thank you.